If AI is a bubble, NVIDIA and Wall Street are about to pour another $500 billion into it, and then your retirement goes with it. If AI is not a bubble, and then it works, intelligence gets cheap, companies need fewer people, and your job goes instead. Your retirement or your job, right? Bad either way. But I don't think those are the choices, and this video is about why. Every major tech needs two inventions. Someone has to invent the machine, and someone has to invent a way to pay for enough of those machines that they really change the economy. And this week is about the second one. NVIDIA just signed agreements with Apollo, BlackRock, Blackstone, Brookfield, Goldman Sachs, and KKR. Together, they want to create financing platforms that can mobilize more than $500 billion of third-party capital for the build-out of AI infrastructure over time. But NVIDIA didn't raise $500 billion. There's no $500 billion bank account waiting to buy GPUs. These are memoranda of understanding. NVIDIA's own announcement says it very, very plainly. These partnerships remain subject to execution of the final agreements. The platforms still have to be formed, investors still have to commit, and each project, of course, still has to qualify for financing. But that being said, six of the largest pools of capital in the world have decided that AI compute can become something they know how to finance. That has not been true before. Microsoft invests in OpenAI. OpenAI buys Microsoft Compute. NVIDIA invests in CoreWeave. CoreWeave borrows money to buy NVIDIA chips. And OpenAI reserves capacity from CoreWeave. NVIDIA has also agreed, under certain conditions, to buy unused CoreWeave capacity. It's all back and forth and back and forth. And here's how big that circle is inside one number. Microsoft booked $24 billion of revenue from OpenAI in fiscal 2026. Set that against the $37 billion AI run rate that Microsoft advertises, and you can see how much of that headline number is one customer that Microsoft also invests in. So you can draw every investment and contract and loan and chip purchase on a page, and you're looking at the same money moving around in a circle, making every company look richer on the way through. Now, those contracts are real, but this isn't one closed loop where NVIDIA sends out a dollar and gets the same dollar back. The concentration still raises a fair question. Are these companies financing genuine demand or financing one another so they can report demand? But the financiers are not optional. And railroads are the cleanest example of that, actually. A railroad company had to buy land and build bridges and lay track and buy locomotives and hire workers years before ticket and freight revenue could repay any of it. The technology was super useful, but the company still couldn't finance a national network from the cash sitting in its bank account. So America built land grants and railroad bonds and underwriting syndicates and investment banks and public markets that could collect money from investors in the US and Europe and finance railroad expansion. The country didn't just invent a better locomotive. It learned how to turn future railroad traffic often years away into money that could lay track today. Now, that system produced speculation. It produced fraud. It produced defaults and the panic of 1873. It also produced the railroad network. The mechanism changes with the machine, but the purpose never does. You move money from people who have it to a productive asset that needs years to pay it back. You need land and power and substations and cooling and networking and buildings and racks of expensive accelerators before a customer receives token one. The capital goes out first, the revenue arrives later. You need to measure that demand without counting the same customer dollar four times. A company called Exponential View actually tried to do that. When a business pays an AI application, and that application pays a model company, and the model company pays a cloud provider, you can't count all three payments as three separate pieces of end demand. Exponential View counts the outside customer dollar exactly once, which is the correct way to find out how much customer demand you have in the system. Their June report puts it at $110 billion of generative AI revenue over the trailing 12 months, with the latest month running at an annualized pace above $175 billion. In other words, it's growing fast. Anthropic said its run rate crossed $47 billion in May, but the latest rumors from Anthropic insiders are that they are going to be hitting over $100 billion in run rate before their IPO later this year. And that's a rumor, and we'll find out what it actually says in the S1, and the rumors will keep running to the IPO. But The point is, we continue to see rapid growth. The median firm spent about $12 per employee. The top 1% companies spent $7,400. And that looks like a market spreading at different speeds, not a market with zero outside customers. Exponential View's estimate is that every 10% cut in token prices leads to 12 to 18% more tokens used. But we do need to be careful with that one. It's their estimate. It's not, you know, a result that's been measured in the market. It's basically an early estimate of the elasticity of tokens. And so we're going to have to start to think about that more deeply as the token economy grows. In other words, generally speaking, as firms get lower token prices, they don't just pocket the savings. They run the model more often. They give an agent more steps. They let it check its work. One completed task that's on that advanced side may involve 50 or even 500 model calls. So falling prices can increase total demand over time. Better models can widen the market again because they start to compete for the money you spend on work and not only the money you spend on software. CoreWeave shows the infrastructure side of things. Its backlog has passed roughly $100 billion, and its quarterly revenue has more than doubled from a year earlier. Now, backlog is not revenue, and CoreWeave still has to build and deliver that capacity. Customers don't reserve $100 billion of compute, though, because nobody wants it. And this is why NVIDIA needs Wall Street. The first wave came from hyperscaler cash, from venture capital, from debt raised by specialized clouds. But the next wave needs insurers and pensions and infrastructure funds and private credit and sovereign capital. The same investors that already finance power plants and aircraft and fiber and warehouses and toll roads. Every major tech needs those two inventions. And this is NVIDIA trying to build that second financing one in public on a deadline. Nobody covering this story is explaining that part. So let me do it because I think it's the whole deal. I want you to imagine a separate company. They're created to own one block of AI infrastructure. It's got the building, the power connection, the cooling, the network, and the GPUs. And it's got a customer who agrees to reserve that capacity or pay a minimum amount for several years. An equity investor puts in money that takes the first loss on that. A lender supplies debt and gets paid before the equity owner. In this situation, the equipment works as collateral, and a reserve account covers a temporary shortfall. In some structures, NVIDIA provides limited credit support. Jensen Huang put a number on that, up to 25% of an opportunity, and he was careful to say on a project-by-project basis. So NVIDIA is taking on some of the residual risk in the system here, but not all of it. And then when the customer payments arrive, the project pays its operating costs, and then its lenders, and then its owners. The risk has not disappeared. Instead, it's been divided into pieces that different investors can evaluate and buy. Start with capital concentration. The same small group of chip companies and clouds and model labs and hyperscalers can be customers and suppliers and lenders and investors in one another. And if one large customer cannot honor a contract, the loss moves through several companies at once. CoreWeave has fast growth. It has this great backlog, but it also has debts and interest costs and continuing losses while it builds out. Both of those facts matter. Demand can be real, and the financing can still be too aggressive. In other words, the A100 chip, which was launched in 2020, will be 9 years old by 2029 and still generating value. So you've got a chip generation from 2020 with a customer contract still running and generating revenue 9 years after launch, and the conventional assumption of a GPU life is 3 to 5 years. That doesn't mean the chip stops depreciating, but it does mean that the strongest version of the stranded asset argument, where an old GPU just quickly becomes worthless, it doesn't necessarily fit the evidence we're seeing. So an old GPU can still keep earning money, and that doesn't mean it's risk-free, right? It still might sell for less than the lender assumed, but it certainly is much less risky than the idea behind a lot of the bubble assumptions, which is this whole concept that people are assuming the GPUs will last longer and be more functional than they really will be. It's starting to look like GPUs have a longer life, and that makes everybody's financing safer. The third risk is incentives. NVIDIA gets paid when the equipment sells. So the cloud operator benefits from announcing a large backlog. The financial firm may collect fees before the project has performed for the full 10 years. So if everybody gets paid early and somebody else owns the long-term risk, underwriting can deteriorate very, very fast. AI infrastructure has leverage and concentrated counterparties and fee incentives and uncertain collateral value. And those are real warning signs. Those are things we have to work to de-risk in the system. But there's much more of a market here than most people assume. In March, CoreWeave closed an $8.5 billion loan facility rated A3 by Moody's and A-low by DBRS. CoreWeave called it the first investment-grade financing secured by high-performance computing infrastructure with a customer contract behind it. So GPU-backed debt already is getting rated, and institutions are already starting to buy it. And then in July, staff at the SEC addressed the next step. They confirmed that data center securitizations are not asset-backed securities under the Exchange Act, which means the risk retention rule written after 2008 doesn't apply to them, which raised some flags for me. I lived through 2008. I remember that. But I do want to be clear about what happened there, what it is and what it is not when the rule doesn't apply. That is not a rule being repealed. It's the staff confirming the rule never anticipated this kind of deal. Rated GPU debt exists. The legal path to selling it far more widely is clearer than it was a month ago. And we expect securitization to follow from that, although the $500 billion deal that I talked about at the top of the video doesn't necessarily imply securitization. The mortgage system broke when underwriting weakened and borrowers stopped paying. Now, that's not what we're seeing. The June data I mentioned earlier, end customer revenue is accelerating. That's what we see consistently from everything across the industry right now. So in that world, a bad AI project is more likely to start as a bad loan against one concentrated customer than as proof that a larger industry is not paying for AI. But a stock market correction, a failed cloud operator, and a 2008-style financial crisis are not the same things. And to get the last one, the risk has to become large and highly leveraged and widely distributed and badly rated and connected enough that many institutions fail together. I can see some of those early pieces, but I cannot see any intent to put that fold machine together. And that full machine certainly does not exist today. The idea of financing is fundamentally linked to the anticipation of end customer demand. And unlike in 2008, where the fundamental issue was the end customer wasn't paying a mortgage, the end customer is buying more and more AI. And that's a very fundamental economic fact that we need to keep our eyes on if we want a healthy system. The end customer has to want to pay for AI. As soon as that stops being true, we're all in trouble. But right now, the end customer wants more and more AI. So what about your job? If the financing works and capacity gets built and capacity, you know, competes in the market and firms start to buy more AI, aren't they going to start to fire more people? That's the core question. But employment among workers aged 22 to 25 in highly AI exposed occupations was about 19% below where it would have been if it had kept pace with less exposed work. That change did not come from firing. It actually came from reduced hiring. Now you might think, okay, there's your answer. It's costing jobs. It's just costing jobs for young people and they're not being hired. You may be right. You may be wrong. That's the problem with economic data. In this case, that same divergence started before generative AI. And so it's a continuation of a trend that started pre-ChatGPT. Is it something that is causative? It's hard to know at scale. Gusto surveyed 1,051 people who started companies in 2025. 60% used AI during launch and half said it made starting significantly faster or cheaper. But only 3% said they likely wouldn't have started without it. Frankly, I think that we are past the point where Silicon Valley would say we have intelligence capable enough to do most people's jobs. And yet, we do not see that going in a straight line to job replacement. And I think the reason is that what I've always been saying, jobs are complicated. Jobs are way more than some raw intelligence against a problem. Jobs take people to do well. And I think most firms are smart enough to see that they actually need people in a lot of these roles, and they can augment them with AI. AI can be a tool that people are expected to use, but they cannot reliably, with confidence, with a dollar on the line, replace people. And this is something where I think the naive assumption in the Valley is in conflict with how people who run ordinary businesses actually see the world. They don't see the world as, okay, this model has gain of function. It's intelligent. I can trust it with everything. They see the world as, is someone going to show up to work and be accountable? So when you see the next giant AI financing announcement, probably tomorrow, ask yourself three things. Is there a firm customer contract? How concentrated is the revenue? Can the GPUs earn enough over the life of the debt after power costs and construction delays and falling token prices to be worth it? And who loses money first if the forecast is wrong? Those questions will tell you whether a project is well-financed. I don't think AI is a bubble in the sense that the underlying market is detached from real demand. In fact, the evidence shows that it's attached to very real, very rapidly growing external customer revenue and demand. The revenue, the adoption, the contracts, the useful work are growing way too quickly for that claim to fit neatly. But I do think some companies are overvalued. Some capacity is going to be built in the wrong place. Some investors will lose a lot of money. And that happened with railroads too. And in that situation, the economy keeps the asset. So you're not trapped in that world between losing your retirement and losing your job. What you're watching is a technology that creates new financial engineering to enable demand to be served by an extraordinary amount of built capacity. That will change what work companies hire for. It will lower the cost of starting a business, and it will do all of that at the same time. And the way that's possible is the financial engineering that NVIDIA did this week. Every major tech needs two inventions, and NVIDIA is now trying to build that second one for AI.